Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, live from the WNYC studios in Soho. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. The beloved and dark musical Sweeney Todd is back on Broadway. On tomorrow's show, we'll be joined by Annalee Ashford, who is Tony-nominated for her role as Mrs. Lovett, the Craven Baker, as well as Alex Lacamoire. Oh, you've heard a few shows that he's worked on as musical supervisor. Little Dear Evan Hansen, little Hamilton. They'll both be our guests. That's in the future. But let's get this hour started with you, the story. Ruta Zepetys is a best-selling author of historical fiction. Her novels take readers from Eastern Europe in World War II era, to life behind the Iron Curtain, to Spain during Franco's reign, to New Orleans in the 1950s. They are works of fiction, but require hours and hours of research. Along the way, she picked up some experience about how to craft a story, and a lot of it came from her own life. In her latest book, her first nonfiction one, she teaches would-be writers to look inward. Ruta Zepetys joins me now to discuss You, the Story, A Writer's Guide to Craft Through Memory. Ruta, welcome to All of It.
Thanks so much for having me.
Listeners, if you have a question on how to write a good narrative, give us a call or text us, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you are a writer, if you're interested in how to write a good narrative, if you have questions about the craft, Ruta is here to help you out. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 is our number. Our socials are at All of It WNYC. We have writing advice for the next few minutes. So, Ruta, why, after writing so many novels, did you write a book about craft?
Well, I realized that when I was doing events, and as much as people were coming to the event to see me and hear me talk about the history behind my books, they were coming really to see themselves. And the conversations about history quickly turned to conversations about personal history. And I found myself constantly asking this question that if a book were written about your life, what would the title be? And so we kind of quickly got off into the weeds about other people's story. And I just decided, you know what? I'm going to write a book about it.
Who did you write the book for? When you picture who's picking up this book, who is it?
I wrote the book for people who might not consider themselves a writer. I find that when people say, oh, well, you know, my story might not be interesting, their story often is the most interesting, right? Truly. But their humility or, you know, daily life tends to steal the sheen from some of our experiences. And so it's very accessible, straightforward, friendly, and, you know, just gives some prompts to kind of open those doors to memory.
Let me give you an example of something that happened to me today and help me understand how I might be able to make a story out of this. I, for the first time in a long time, got on the subway and went the wrong direction. Hadn't done that in a million years. It's a rookie move in New York City. And I didn't realize it for three or four stops. How can that be a prompt? What can I do with that?
Oh, I mean, for me, that's already bursting with story. And also, it depends what kind of genre we might be working in. Let's say that this is, I don't know, we're writing a historical book. What if you got on that subway and you're actually going the wrong way because you're going into the past? Hmm. You know, what if you're visiting your past? What if this is like a paranormal kind of a story and actually the train is taking you, you are going the right way, but the train is taking you the wrong way. The most important words, what if Allison got on the train and didn't realize, you know, where she was going? What if she momentarily had, you know, a little blink and didn't realize? What if she fell asleep? What if she, those words, what if, those really set the stage for creating a story.
Let's take a call. Paul is calling in from Manhattan. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling All of It.
Okay. Hi. I'm experiencing writer's block. I can't get myself disciplined enough to sit down and write, and wondered if your guests had any suggestions for combating that.
Writer's block. Any thoughts, Ruta?
Yes, definitely. And first of all, I'm sorry that you're going through that. And please know that it happens not only to writers, anyone in the creative field. It happens to musicians. It happens to athletes. What I do, what helps, is instead of just sitting and staring at the paper or at the laptop, I use a combinatory element, such as, what if you listen to music? You're still thinking about your story. You're still thinking about what you want to write. But suddenly, if you listen to music, it might unlock another part of your brain. And it's as if you're watching a soundtrack, you know, listening to a soundtrack and watching the movie of the story. Or some people find taking a walk helps sort of untangle that block and their brain. So I would suggest doing another activity in combination with thinking about the story that you want to write.
We got a text that asks, what's the rule about saying less than complimentary, but perhaps true stories involving family members?
Ooh, this is a great question. Thank you for asking that. First, let's keep in mind, what's important initially is for you to tell that story. Initially, that's important. So with the initial draft, you want to get it all out. And what you need to remember is that what you write might not be what is eventually published or shared among your family. But you have a story to tell. And so in that initial draft, I say spill it all.
My guest is Ruta Zepetis. The name of her book is You, The Story, A Writer's Guide to Craft Through Memory. If you have questions about how to write a good narrative, maybe you're working on something and you need a little nudge or a little advice, our number is 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. You can also text to us there, 212-433-9692. That is the phone number and the text line. Also, social media is still available at All of It WNYC. Ruta, I'm going to ask you, when was the moment when you used your own story?
Oh, wow. I use my own story often. People ask, how do I create a vivid depth of feeling in my fiction? I do that by revisiting my own memories. For example, if I'm writing a piece of fiction where a character is heartbroken, you know, I don't have to look too far. I mean, I've had those experiences. I've been heartbroken. I've been humiliated. And revisiting that and saying, wow, you know, how can I now express that in this character? And going back to what the person asked about writing about family members, you know, there's emotion there too. But let's also keep in mind that in the scheme of things, we're all the villain in someone's story, aren't we? We're all the villain in someone's story. It's true. So when we are writing, when I say, you know, yes, write it, get it out there, but maybe you won't publish that version, but it's important to express it. And I express it by digging back into my own memories and then braiding it and weaving it into fictional characters.
Let's take another call on line two. We have David, who is working on a project now. Hi, David. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, am I on?
You are on the air.
Wow. Okay. So I just got onto Social Security disability, so I can't work anymore. And I was an English major at Northwestern, and I decided that since I can't really work, I'm going to write a book. So what I decided to do is take 10 of my favorite books, and I'm reading them all to sort of just get some, you know, ideas, not to steal ideas, because I have the idea for my book, but just because I only wrote short stories and never wrote a book, you know, and I want to write a book with vignettes, you know, so it's like, you know, me semi-autobiographical, so it's like, you know, me as a baby, 5 years later, 5 years later, 5 years later, 5 years later, you know, sort of, you know, it reminds me of Olive Kitteridge, if somebody has read that, that's, it's not a straight story.
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm asking for advice. That's all.
Okay. Advice, you know, for somebody who's written short stories and is thinking about writing a book and it seems daunting. How does one start, Ruta?
Well, I think the way that you've explained that you've started is fantastic. Coming up with a structure that you can apply to your memories and to the story idea that you have. You've explained that you're going to do it in vignettes. And I think that's great. What you're doing is you're chunking it. You're creating these compact modules for you to put the story into. And some people who might not actually even be that far along or have that idea, I often tell them bullet points. How do you get started? Make 10 bullet points. If you had to summarize your life, and of course, none of us can summarize our life in 10 bullet points, but that's a way to make it a bit more manageable. If you break it down and list 10 bullet points, or think, well, you know, in the story that is my life, I can only have 5 characters. Who from my life would make the cut? Like who gets in that story? So I always say, when you're beginning, break it down to very small, manageable steps. Otherwise, it can be unwieldy and overwhelming.
You believe in keeping a diary. Tell me why, and do you have a strict definition of diary?
I don't have a strict definition, but I not only believe in keeping a diary, Allison, for my books that I've written, I have read so many diaries. I mean, of FBI agents and you know, KGB agents. And I feel that diaries and journals allow us an insight into someone's personal experience that, if we are writing a story, can really infuse emotion and stakes and, let's face it, honesty. But people think of a diary that it has to be a journal or the small, you know, when I was young, I had a diary that had a little lock and key. But it doesn't have to. We have, I mean, thousands of emails, of text messages, of receipts. Financial records can be a great form of a journal. What if you pulled a receipt from 10 years ago? I mean, where were you? What were you doing? What were you buying and why? So I think of a diary in many forms.
Interesting. Expanding the idea of diary. I mean, you could look back at your Instagram. You could
look
back at your Facebook posts.
Look back at your mixtapes. Look back at the music that you were listening to. Sometimes those songs, you know, they become, you know, an anthem for a time period of our life.
Let's talk to Logan, calling in from Morristown, New Jersey. Hi, Logan.
Hello. So I have this issue when I write, and whenever I'm writing dialogue or monologue, I feel like all the characters, everyone has a very unique way of talking, like in real life. And I feel like all the characters talk in my voice, and I want to have characters that have a unique way of expressing themselves, and I feel like it's hard to make up someone who's talking the way another person would talk. I feel like I'm always writing in my own voice, and so it feels like all the characters kind of feel like the same person, even if they're not.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's super interesting question. And is something I think that's common for all of us. But really, what dialogue is, I think, is a study of rhythm. And it's totally natural that the rhythm that you hear is your own speaking voice. That happens to me as well. And prior to becoming a novelist, I spent 22 years in the music business working with songwriters, and I studied melody and rhythm. And when you're writing dialogue, I want you to think of people that you hear on the street, and not only the words that you hear, but what you hear between the words and what you see between the words, injecting that pause or that hike of the eyebrow or someone sort of kneading their hands, or that's showing more about the scene that you're writing and bringing the dialogue to life without saying, she was speaking nervously. You can show what the person is doing as they're speaking. And so I find those rhythmic, you know, elements injected sparingly can really help create a signature style for a character when they're speaking.
Barbara's calling in from Mineola. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling. All of it. You're on with Ruta Zepetis, author of You, The Story.
Thank you very much. My question is, I finished my book, but how do I get over the fear of sending it because of rejection? And if I do find the courage to actually send it to a publisher and it does get rejected, what do I do then? Do I send it to different publishers, or I don't know what to do in case I get rejected?
The fear of rejection.
Fear of rejection, yes. And first, can we just celebrate? You've written a book. I mean, that is more than most people actually do. You have a book. So that's something to celebrate. And yes, so if it's any encouragement, my first novel was rejected by every single publisher and by some publishers twice. And some of the rejections were quite harsh about my writing style or about the main character. And so what I want you to think of when you get rejected is you don't need any publisher. You need the right publisher who is going to understand what you and your story are trying to convey. And so it is a natural process that you will be rejected. And so what do? You learn from that rejection and really think about what they're saying and whether you agree with it or not. If not, throw it away and try another publisher. I think my count was 17 rejections before I actually found a publisher. And that was a book that ended up then being a number one New York Times bestseller and published in 60 countries. So remember, it's very subjective. So going into it, assure yourself, you know, okay, rejection is protection. The publisher that rejects me is not the publisher I need, and I'm just going to keep going.
Best advice I ever got once was you only need one of certain things, one good partner in life, one good place to live. And it sounds like you need just one good publisher.
You're so right. Exactly.
My guest is Ruta Zapatis. The name of the book is You, the Story, A Writer's Guide to Craft. If you have a question about writing, if you have a question about writing a good narrative, maybe there's something you're stuck on and the piece you're working on, Ruta's here to help. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll have more with Ruta. We'll talk about some good writing prompts and the four H's, which she says are essential instruments in a writer's toolkit. Stay with us. You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Ruta Zapatis, author of You, the Story, A Writer's Guide to Craft Through Memory. Ruta is an established writer, a New York Times bestselling writer who has written this terrific book to get people, other people, engaged in writing. You talk about the four H's in your book: heartbreak, hope, hilarity, and humiliation. Ruta, you say they are essential instruments in a writer's toolkit. What is it about these four states of being that are essential?
Well, those four states of being, those are really the essence of the human experience, right? If we feel loss, that means we have the capacity to love. And that's important because writing well is less about, you know, where you've been or what you've seen or how you were educated. It's more about your emotions and your feelings and how you express them. And if you have felt deeply, you've lived deeply, and you're a courageous person, of deep experience. And that's one of the tools of being a writer. And that's why I say those four H's are so important.
Let's talk to Charles from Merrick, New York. Hi, Charles. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hey, you bet. I call frequently and never get through, but never just ended.
You are on the air.
I just happened to be reading Ernest Hemingway's A Movable Feast, right? So semi-autobiographical. And one of your previous callers was asking about writer's block. And just yesterday, I read the passage in A Movable Feast where he says, "I always stop writing when I know what's going to happen next in the story. Then when I leave the writing table or wherever, I never think about the story or about writing. I go about my day, I go about my business, whatever it may be, going to the bullfight if it was Hemingway. And then when I come back to writing, I know, you know, already what was going to happen. And then you know, and then it begins, and then it's the famous quote, I always start with one true sentence, blah, blah, blah. But the point being that he stops his writing session when he knows what's going to happen next.
Charles, thank you for calling in. Josh from Brooklyn has a question. Hi, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First time ever doing this, actually. My question is, when do you you're working on something for a while and you know you got to give up on it. When do you leave it behind and move on to something else? And when do you come back to it, if ever?
Tough question.
But it's a great question, right? Because in life, we are enchanted with something and captivated with something. And then all of a sudden, you know, wow, maybe I'm not as interested in it anymore. And if you're having a hard time getting excited about it, I would say that is a time when you really need to look at what are you writing about and why are you writing about this? Sometimes drilling to the why can help you reignite your story, but in a different way. Oh, wait a minute. What I was really trying to do, I was really trying to tell a story about my grandmother, but now I'm off in the weeds about World War II. I need to get back on track. So if you drill to the why, ask yourself, why, you know, why am I writing this? You know, why? And maybe that can help you get back on track and reignite your purpose.
We're going to take a break. We're going to go on a tangent and talk to someone who just wants to thank you for your work, Ruta. Line 7 is Rutia, I think is how you say it. Hi, Rutia. Barutia?
Hi, it's actually Barutia. Hi. So, yes, I wanted to thank Ruta for writing this book. I wish that her book was written earlier. My father was one of the people who whose life kind of paralleled her book, that Shades of Grey. And he went through a lot of things during World War II, was jailed, sent to Siberia. And I wish that we had his memories recorded in a way that he could have recorded. And we had that for our family.
Birutė, thank you so much for calling in.
Yes. Oh, Birutė is Lithuanian. Ačiū labai, Birutė. I appreciate it so much. And I think there are so many of us who come from countries and cultures where our stories have not yet been shared to the extent that they should be.
You have several writing prompts to get people just in the practice of writing. One of them is write out the lyrics to Happy Birthday in an original stylistic voice using varied punctuation and white space on the page. How does this open up one to write?
Well, let's take that song, Happy Birthday. If we take something that's so well known, we might feel that there are absolute parameters around that. But who's to say that Happy Birthday can't be sung in a completely different way? Who's to say that you can't reinvent that song and make it something completely your own? And in doing that, you're expressing your writer's voice. Maybe you would express Happy Birthday with no capitalization, no punctuation. Maybe you'd arrange the words in a different way to use the white space on the page. All of that is your personal expression and your expression of style. And I find that really interesting to take something that is, you know, has maybe been done to death and is we think, oh, this is pretty standard. Why not create a new standard?
I love this one. Take a trip to a local thrift store. Find a book or item that has someone's name on it. Once you do that, what should you do?
Well, I'll thank you for asking this, because this happened to me. So I'm a Goodwill shopper, and I went into the Goodwill, our local thrift store, and I found a Vivitar point and shoot camera with the film still in it. And it had a little, you know, printout label with the person's name on it. And what I did, you can either do two things. You can either use that as a prompt and create the story yourself, develop the film and the camera in this case, and create a story. What I did was I used it as a research prompt. And I went on the internet thinking, does this person know that their camera with their story and their memories, the film still in it, wound up in this thrift store. And so I was doing research, trying to figure out who this person was and imagine, how did the camera get there? So there's different, you know, approaches you can take when you find something at a thrift store, of either a research prompt or, you know, a fictional prompt to create a story. When you look at a pair of shoes, oh, did the woman, did she dance herself to death? What about the dress with the cigarette burn? You know, what was the story? You know, where did that cigarette burn come from?
And you also suggest for dialogue, thinking of a conversation that has meaning to you for some reason, and then reworking that conversation. What would that be like? What would that look like?
For me, in a couple of ways. When I was young, I used to be a big eavesdropper at restaurants. And, you know, my parents were having these long dinners and I'd be listening to the conversations next to me, trying without turning around to imagine what the, quote, characters looked like. But then in reflecting on dialogue, there are conversations that we had, but also conversations that we never got to have. And both of those are prompts, right? And I remember even another case with me. My dear beloved father was suffering from dementia. And as a memory prompt, I would use old conversations with him and revisit those conversations. And to some extent, some of those conversations were still alive in his memory. And we could connect through those old stories and those old conversations. So there's lots of different ways, like I said, dialogue we've had that we've never gotten to have. And in some cases, revisiting the dialogue that was there, but in a new way.
Let's talk to Beth from Passaic County, New Jersey. Hi, Beth.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. I've written some vignettes and I don't know how to string them together. I know what the goal of the book will be. I know, you know, where I want to go with it. I just don't know how to tie them together. It's all in one theme, but do I time shift? Do I location shift? I don't know how to do that part, and I would love to hear your comments.
Certainly. And is the book you're writing fiction or nonfiction?
It's nonfiction. It's a series of adventures regarding my daughters when they were little growing up. So it's going to probably be either nonfiction or fiction based on their stories.
Got it. So if you can find, in thinking about your daughters and their adventures, if you can find some common themes or the rule in plotting, and let's think about it, a plot is what connects our stories and connects these vignettes together. The main element of plotting is, what does the character want? And so if you're thinking about your daughters and as they're progressing through life, if you could connect these story components through, you know, what they wanted and what was keeping them from getting what they wanted. Life is a series of hurdles and experiences. And each time we reach one and we jump over one, there is that hurdle. So think about maybe thinking back, you know, on what your daughters wanted. And could you connect through that want, through that plotting element of that want?
Let's talk to Maria. Maria. Maria from Manhattan. Hi, Maria.
Yes. Hello there. Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Maria, and I am working on a book with photographs and memories and some recipes about a restaurant that I did. And I'm working on putting it into order. And I wonder who to approach with the outline, or that may be too many questions in one thing at the same time. And thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for writing this book, because you mentioned recipes. Food is a form of story. Think about it. All of us, you know, gathering around the table, some of our most, you know, fond memories either took place while eating or, you know, making food. So what to do? I would say in this case, I would suggest putting together a brief proposal that states the description of the book and perhaps a sample chapter. And that would give, if you're looking for a publisher or an agent, That would give them a sense of the project and allow them to discuss it with you and perhaps ask questions. And that would give you an idea, okay, I see what kind of questions they're asking. So I'm seeing what's interesting them about this project. And that would help you then format the project in a way that would be, you know, most interesting to an editor, a publisher, or an agent. So maybe even just a 3 to 4 page summary with a description of the book, a summary, who the audience is, and then a sample chapter and maybe a photograph and one recipe.
In another time in your life, Ruta, you were an assistant to a songwriter. And I'm curious what you learned from that that helps you in your writing today.
Oh my gosh. Allison, I had a bail bondsman on speed dial. It was a front row seat to creativity. I mean, it really was. There were stories unfolding every single day. But what I did find was that when these songwriters, they came to a session and they were writing a song, when they put a piece of their own story, even if it was just something that happened that day at lunch, if they put a piece of their own story into the song, year after year, I saw it was much more likely to become successful because it was authentic. And there was some magic resonance in that authenticity versus just sitting down and them saying, okay, I'm going to write a love song. But it wasn't something that they really felt. I saw these writers write a song, and then fast forward, thousands of people in an arena are holding up lighters and claiming that story as the anthem of their life. So again, I think, you know, put a piece of yourself in. And let's also, though, acknowledge when we're talking about memory and story, there are some memories that aren't worth returning to. They're just not. You know, protect your head and your heart always. But for the ones that are worth returning to, how could you craft those into a story?
If someone is feeling really inspired after this conversation, what's the first thing they should do once the show is over and they find a moment of quiet?
I want them, first of all, to assure themselves that they might not consider themselves a storyteller, but they have a story. And we all wish that we had better archived our parents, our grandparents, and even our own story. So, like I said, let's do that bullet point list. What would be the top 10 aspects of your life that you feel are key to your journey and your story? And then, you know, again, if a story was written about your life, what would the title be? I want them to think about that title exercise.
The name of the book is You, the Story, A Writer's Guide to Craft Through Memory. Thanks to everybody who called, and thanks to Ruta Sepetys for writing the book and sharing her expertise. Ruta, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.